to be able to actually conjure up something intentionally that goes, I've been working on this problem. Now I'm going to take a break and I'm just going to daydream about it and see what lands. It's a little bit like actually my husband and I went for a walk yesterday, and he had been working on trying to figure out this a solution to a problem. And he'd spent probably about like half an hour, 45 minutes, just like, oh, what if I, what if I, what if I? And it's like, hey, let's go for a walk. So we took the dog for a walk. And within the first like 5 minutes, we were just walking quietly, letting the dog do his thing because he's got to, smell every tree, because why not?
Yeah, why not?
He's like, oh,
He's checking his mail.
yeah, yes, scrolling. But my husband just was like, oh, and then he tells me this answer, and I was like, oh, okay. He's like, no, you don't understand. It just hit me.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Ridardi. If you love listening to interviews with grateful entrepreneurs who are making this world a better place, be sure to subscribe, share, and leave your groovy review. Today, I'm joined by heart-centered productivity coach, Judith Pinto. Judith is a seasoned solution-focused coach, meditation instructor, and entrepreneurial mom with over 30 years of experience as a therapist for kids with developmental and mental health needs. In the realm of productivity, she guides distracted moms to overcome overwhelm and achieve meaningful goals. A calming presence, Judith seamlessly blends science and woo, offering an artful approach to tackling issues like perfectionism, anxiety, and shiny object syndrome. With a penchant for storytelling, she enriches discussions with insights drawn from her diverse background. Beyond coaching, Judith is a talented musician, embracing jazz, especially the works of Thelonious Monk, and showcasing her skills with the Celtic harp. Welcome, Judith. There is so much to talk about here. All right, tell us your story. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, like with so many things in life, long and winding roads. I had the last decade, probably 12 years, lots of grief and loss, starting with my father, a divorce, pets galore, most recently one last week, and a lot of really good therapists along the way who I got to know, how they thought and how I really admired the calming presence. So, I work with kids. It's not always a calming thing that you need to show up with when you work with kids. You kind of have to be this playful, hyper thing. So that worked for me, but really got to appreciate that place of calm. And I think started to reflect that back and got to a place where it's like, okay, this feels better. The more you work with kids, the more you meet their caregivers. And then you start to see the dance that when you can show up as a calming presence for these kids instead of a party, they respond. And oftentimes, where parents were struggling, where I wasn't, because they're parents and they're always different, kids are always different with their parents than they are with anybody else. The more a parent could be present and calm and focused and be able to sort of handle emotions, their own and their kids, the better. And so I got into meditation, specifically neuromeditation. I studied with the Neuromeditation Institute in Boulder, Colorado, and integrated previous training in solution-focused coaching and then a lot of woo, because I mean, I've got tarot decks and a few crystals. Don't have a lot of crystals, but tarot decks and oracle cards, and creative activities into just learning to lean in and trust that if I could get my brain and my body to a place where I was grounded, that the right words would come from my mouth. I would be able to trust that the right things would be said, the right things would be done, and I could walk away from most situations as a parent in my business. And actually I had a business coach too, who very much leaned into meditation, which was sort of like an interesting thing. When I first started my practice, we would start all of our coaching sessions with a meditation. And I actually had a focus statement for my business, which was I was going to enjoy the process of building my business. That's something that came to me in a meditation. And it was like, yeah, I would like to enjoy this process of building something, whatever that is. And I've sort of taken that focus statement into life. It's I just want to enjoy the process of living because there's only so many years left, I'm sure.
There's so much to talk about. Okay, first of all, you're like the third or fourth woo-woo interview. This is a business podcast.
I
And
know.
it's very interesting to me the way that the interviews line up, because I normally just go in the order that people sign up. I don't curate the positioning. Sometimes I do. Occasionally I do when it's appropriate. But so the fact that the last three episodes were so woo-woo, and particularly the most previous, I think you'll be the there might be an interview between you and the mo yeah there is there's so last week's episode is about astrology, business astrology, but the week before that it's an episode about pets and people and about dealing with pet loss. And that just happened. I mean, it just happens that you just lost a pet. I mean, the thing, the circle, it's I'm not woo-woo. I'm not really into woo-woo, but for some reason, it's coming into my life. It's so strange. It's so strange. And I just did a vision board workshop yesterday, and it was the fastest vision board I have ever created.
That's
It
woo.
was so fast. I know that's woo. I know, and I've been doing that since I was a teenager. But that, I mean, it was just so quick. So, I don't know what that's telling. What's that telling me, universe? What are you trying to tell me, universe? Anyway, I want to go back to what you said. You learned neuro meditation.
Neuromeditation.
Can
So
you
it's
please tell me
brain.
what that is?
Yeah, it's brain-based meditation. So the Neuromeditation Institute, Jeffrey Tarrant is the owner and kind of lead trainer. And he basically looked at the research, the brain research on meditation. So all of these kind of meta-analyses and kind of like here's four styles, and they all work differently. If you're doing a focus style, if you're doing an open heart style, if you're doing mindfulness, or and the last one is kind of like a Zen meditation where you let your mind go blank, quiet mind. Maybe that's I'm probably weakest at that, which is why I can't remember it. Quiet mind. And looked
See,
at,
that's why I don't meditate, because that's what I learned, quiet mind.
yeah, well, that me too. It all felt like, because I mean, the minute I try to go quiet, my
Never
mind's
happens.
not.
Never
Yeah.
happens, yeah.
And then I feel like a failure. And actually, I know lots of people who've said that. It's like I can't meditate. My mind is just too active. And so, he looked at the research that showed from fMRI studies how different meditation styles
What is
have
fMRI?
a story, functional magnetic resonance imaging.
Okay.
So they can actually look at what the brain's doing while you're doing something. So you're conscious. And so while people are meditating, they can look at what's happening in the brain. And those four different styles have different impacts on the brain. And so people who have a hard time with focusing can use one style or better off using one style. People who need maybe to manage stress are better off using a different style. Now you can use all of them, but it's probably going to be easier to do one and to kind of have it as a dipping your toe in the water and learning. So I started with that and then started to infuse a lot of woo into it because it just had to go there. And so he teaches it as a brain-based practice. So you're teaching your brain to do something very intentional. So integrating that brain-based piece into all of those other pieces that are a little bit more mystical. So, you don't have to believe it, but if you step in and just trust that when you deal out a card that says, whatever. I did this once actually as with fortune cookies. I bought a box of fortune cookies. And for 31 days, I broke open a fortune cookie every morning. And it said exactly what I needed to hear, which was ridiculous.
That is ridiculous, but awesome.
Yeah. And so I ended up journaling about that. And it was sort of, and I mean, it's
That would
projection, right?
also be an awesome Instagram feed.
I know. That's a great idea. That's a great idea. Just put out fortune cookies. What does this mean to you? That, yeah. But it was a really nice way to prompt journaling because it told me what I wanted for 31 days. And I stopped after that because I thought, wow, this is, I'm going to end up like, this is going to get obsessive. I'm actually thinking I'd like to do it again in March because March has 31 days, maybe just the 31 day months.
And I
But
challenge you to do the Instagram thing.
okay, challenge accepted. Challenge accepted. I love fortune cookies, fortunately.
Right. And you know what? Your Instagram link will be in the show notes,
Okay.
y'all. This is episode 211. It'll be in the show notes, gratitudegeek.com, episode 211. All
All right. Yes, I know you're on Instagram. Yeah.
You know what? I only post the podcast episodes on Instagram. I used to
Okay.
do a lot more Instagram, but it became too fake to me. But however, for what you're talking about, the fortune cookie thing, I think that has
That could
wings.
work.
But for me, I'm like, you do not really, I mean, the number of people I knew in real life would post these pictures, and I'm like, that's not reality.
Yeah.
You know, your life is not that perfect. So I just sort of, I don't know. I stayed away from Facebook. I don't know why we're talking about social media. I stayed away from Facebook for years just because it felt so gross. But I did a really good job of cleaning up my feed and getting rid of the stuff that made me feel icky. And now Facebook is the place where I like to hang out.
Yeah, that's
So
important.
it's not as fake, I don't think. I don't know. LinkedIn is good too, but I don't go there very often. I
LinkedIn
know.
feels like work career. Facebook feels like community, potentially, if you're in the right groups and the right
If you're
team.
in the right groups, I mean, you and I are supposedly in business, so
Yeah.
LinkedIn should be a good place for us.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, only like 2 or 3% of LinkedIn users actually post on a daily basis. So
Yeah.
you'll have more eyes on your content, but I just don't. That's not where I hang out. That's not where my
Yeah.
people. That's not where my clients are, right?
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, but for that whole fortune cookie thing, that could drum up a whole new list of clients for you.
That's true.
I don't know.
Wow. There's a sign. Three
You
books
know?
fell down on my shelf. They're
Really?
echoing. Yes, it was like, pay attention to that, Judith.
Well, that's like
I'm right.
why do I have all these guests on my show? And like this is 2 episodes in a row where we're talking about tarot. So does that mean I need to find my deck that's been in storage for 20 years? Do I
You
need to find
have
my deck?
one.
I have two decks. I have two decks. I don't know where they are. They're somewhere in storage, but I have two decks.
You'll probably remember where they are. It'll come to you.
Crazy, but I'm
It'll
not
come to
really
you.
woo-woo. I'm you know I
Okay.
believe I totally believe in manifesting, but I know how to manifest everything I want, but I don't know, I just don't feel like I'm a woo-woo person. I feel like I'm too pragmatic for that,
Fair.
but I'm around a lot of woo-woo people. Isn't that
Fair.
weird? Isn't that weird?
I steered away from woo, I think, because it felt too, I don't know, it didn't feel scientific. It didn't feel, clinical. I know how the brain works. I know how the body works. This is what I do. I work in facts. I work in science. I read literature, like scientific literature. I don't wave, garlic around and hope for some healing. And that's actually one of the kind of healing practices from my family of origin. So there was like, garlic and prayers. It was, and I probably pushed away from that a little bit to just sound like, nope, not it.
But I always think that because Buddhism and Hinduism and all these ancient and Confucian, I mean, these ancient religions, we're basically doing what those religions taught us, or some of them aren't religion. I guess Confucianism and Buddhism are philosophies, not religions. But we're doing the things that they taught us, that they taught thousands of years ago. Today, we're just calling them different things, right? So there is some some facts, some science behind this. What I love about the Dalai Lama is he always talks about how science and Buddhism can cross over, and that there's merging, and that scientists can learn from Buddhists and Buddhists can learn from scientists. You don't hear that in any other religion or philosophy. That's anyway, long story short,
Very
and you know,
true.
and if you believe that he's the 14th Dalai Lama, you know, that what is that? 2,000 years, 1,000 something years, 1500, 1400 years? I
We're
don't know.
definitely in the four digits.
Yeah. So anyway, wait, wow, we went down this. Okay, I had a question for you. Oh, I was going to tell, I had a statement for you, not a question. So I agree with you about the facts thing. I'm a science-based person too, which is why, you know, why I on the peripheral, I get the woo, but I want the facts too, which is why when before we started this meeting, and I, audience, I know I've never really talked about this before, but before before we started this podcast, I grabbed this patch called Focus and I put it on my arm because it does exactly what meditation would do, right? It would, okay. It calms you, it helps you focus, it gets you into the zone. And I knew that I was a little frazzled. I believe this patch works. It works through your neural matrix. It gives your message a brain and your brain decodes it. There'll be a link in the show notes. Would I have sat here for 3 minutes and done a breathing exercise? Probably not. Right. But I put the patch on. So there is a solution for everybody.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a solution. Yeah. So there are, if you have an issue, you can come at it from a lot of different angles. So talk about that.
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, part of that is our belief system. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
absolutely.
Like when I work with people, it's skills, what we do, it's knowledge, what we know, and it's what we believe. It's that heart piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if, actually this ties back to a woo story. After my father passed and a friend of mine took me out geocaching. I don't know if are you familiar with geocaching?
I've never done it, but it looks like fun. Yeah.
And it was winter. And so it was called hard water caching. So literally driving her 4x4 on a frozen lake on a beautiful day. It was like,
wait, hold
stunning.
On a minute. How did they get the little messages out there on the frozen lake?
Because you drive on the lake, but everything's hidden along the edge. And so it was like a setup, like, you know, whoever had done it. And then, you know, snow had happened. And so you couldn't necessarily always tell where people were. So it wasn't a clearly marked. So we're following these other people that are out there doing different things. And there were some people like ice fishing too. But on this frozen lake, and we get out and we're trucking to this one cache, and it's quite a walk through the snow. But she starts to tell me, she's very intuitive, and she says, I don't know if I should say this, but I feel like right now I should. And she tells me that my father had spoken to her and told me that I would be okay. And she says, and you can call it what, you know, like you can just dismiss it. It's okay. I totally get it. And she's been an intuitive for quite some time. And I said, you know, okay, like, thank you. Thank you for telling me that. And so we get to the cache, and it's one of these caches where you're supposed to reach in and pull out something to take away and drop something in. So you kind of do an exchange. So while she's filling out our names, I open the jar and she's like, I'm like, so I just reach in. Yep. She's like, reach in. I just grab this thing. It was a silver heart. And on one side of it was carved the word believe. And the other side, it was believe in French. And I was like, are you kidding? I said, this is what I grabbed.
The word
and
for
she's
believe.
Like, I didn't make this up. Like, I did not come out here and just fill the jar with.
I'm sorry, but the first thing I thought was believe in French. Why would you need to believe in French? I realized that you meant believe in French, in the French
yes,
language.
The word.
En français. Oh, that's hilarious. I'm sorry, but yeah, so you got this this heart belief. I mean, wow. Okay, sorry, that was a completely inappropriate tangent. But back to the message. And yeah, your dad was sending you a message.
Yeah. And so that kind of landed for me, and that was early on in that last 12-year journey. And it just allowed me to kind of go, you know, yeah, sometimes you just have to trust that there's more than what we can measure and what we can calibrate. You know, I have a dog, one left, who for whatever reason, you know, like he puts his nose up against something that's probably just really disgusting. But my daughter reassures me, because she is quite an animal nerd, that A, he doesn't eat disgusting things. He just takes deep chemical analyses of it. His nose is much more capable of detecting what's in that than mine. So his ability to sense things through his nose is far more advanced. It's a little chemical machine. Why would I assume then that with the senses that I have, that that's all there is? We know that dogs hear things that are outside of our range. Like
And
there could
we
be so much more that we can't tell.
humans and other primates use our hands. We're tactile. We touch things. Dogs don't have that ability.
No.
They smell and they hear and they see.
Yeah.
We touch. Chimpanzees touch, gorillas touch, monkeys touch, but raccoons and otters probably do it too, but the rest of the animals, they have their sight, their hearing, and their smell and their taste, right? So we have an extra, what is that, sense? Is that, are those called
Well, a
senses? Yeah.
much Yeah, there are other senses, but like a
Yeah.
much more finely developed sense of touch
Yeah.
than dogs would have at their paws.
So it makes sense that their nose would be more
Yeah.
sensitive or more
Well,
in.
and that's why dogs can detect COVID and cancer. And like I know when my mom had her bout with cancer, our little Shih Tzu at the time, like he just walked over and sat on her lap. And he was not the kind of cuddly dog. He was an independent little man. But yeah, there he was sitting on her lap, kind of like, hello, pay attention here. And she didn't have a diagnosis yet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I've heard
Yeah.
that before, but I've never experienced it. Although I did have a cat. I was really sick. I was single. I lived alone and I was really, really sick. And this cat never left my side. And she was an outdoor cat who never came in the house unless she was being fed or sleeping time. So yeah. So I think cats are intuitive, or dogs
Yeah.
too.
Yeah.
I'm a
Well,
cat, I'm a cat person. You're a dog person,
yeah. Well, I'm allergic to cats, or I'd be a cat person. I could do both. I could have all. Agnostic.
Hairless cats seem interesting, but man, I don't know if I could pet one.
My daughter's friend, when she was in elementary school in the neighborhood, had a hairless cat who was hilarious because Bill the Cat, is that the cartoon?
I think so. Yeah.
He looked like that.
Oh, how
Like just
funny.
with this little tuft of like a little sprig on top. It was,
That's really. Oh, I've never heard of that. How funny.
yeah.
I
He was
love it.
not cuddly. He was not cuddly. He didn't necessarily like to cuddle. He liked to
Yeah.
eat.
Yeah.
But
I don't, yeah. These breeds. Okay. So let's talk about what you do. You work with kids or their parent and their parents?
my clinical practice is with kids and kids with, issues of neurodiversity and developmental needs. But my coaching practice is with women, adult women, who are open to both integrating that science and that woo to
Well,
get
how
to
do you
places.
balance having the, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but how do you balance having both of those?
Very part-time.
Okay.
Yeah, very part-time hats. So, I mean, my clinical practice is geographically very limited and very much specialized. So this is kind of following my woo bliss.
Neural diversity, is it, it's neural with an L, right? Or is it neuro with
I
an
think it's
O?
O. I think it's
Okay,
neuro.
neurodiversity. We're learning that there are more and more people who have it. We're just, so I think it's beautiful. I mean, I love the whole concept of people's brains working in different ways. If you don't have five different people coming at something, this, looking at a problem from five different ways, how do you know you have the best solution?
Exactly. Well, I mean, first undergraduate degree was in zoology. So
Oh,
I,
really?
hung out in, in 1988, this in August of 1988, hanging out in Jasper National Park, following bighorn sheep to do kind of research on highway mortality. Yeah, I had legs like tree trunks that summer. It was like hiked for hours every day. And some of the best memories really were that 1 month. But we know that biodiversity is an indicator of strength. in a population.
Yes.
So, you know, when you've got just, you know, one lone elephant, male and female, like you're not going to have a healthy population.
Mm-mm.
What you want is a diverse population. And that's just in one species, but biodiversity really is about having a richness of a variety of species in an area. And so it would make sense that the human species should be equally biodiverse as a species, and that our brains would reflect that biodiversity.
Exactly.
Our brains should be different. We come from our own unique genetic makeup, our own lived experiences of all of those ancestors that came before us, our own lived experiences from in utero on. And, you know, like just because you have two kids living in the same family doesn't mean they've had the same experience. They have very different experiences of mother and father. And even the dog is going to like one, cuddle with one and kind of be a little more with the other, right? Like every experience.
And it's weird how they choose their human too.
Yeah.
So I, when I was in college, I thought that I was going to be a paleontologist and, not a paleontologist, scratch that, an anthropologist. My daughter's a paleontologist. I thought I was going to be an anthropologist, and I was really, really fascinated by human evolution. But I sort of, you know, after my life took a different path, I stepped away from it. So I didn't keep up with the science.
Yeah.
But recently I saw a documentary. It was in the last 5 years. I saw a documentary about the Neanderthal and the Devonian, I think it was called Devonian, the Devonian DNA that exists in today's humans. So Europeans, like something like 5% of Europeans have Neanderthal DNA. And most people who live in the Himalayas have Devonian DNA, which gives them the ability, and I might be wrong, it might be the Andes and not the Himalayas, but it gives them the ability to breathe the thinner air because their lungs are different than if they don't have the Devonian DNA.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's just, to me, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So if something millions of years ago created a population today that gives a population the ability to breathe at a higher altitude than the rest of us poor folk, right? Or whatever the I don't know what the Neanderthal advantage is yet. I mean, I'm sure there is one. The people who have the 5% probably have some sort of advantage. But it's just, to me, it's fascinating. It is.
And
and
it
that
makes
speaks to what
complete
you were
sense.
saying.
It makes complete sense that we should be as diverse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we wouldn't want to be less diverse.
Yeah.
That takes us out of having an advantage. And so
I think that's why America is so strong in the world, because we have diversity.
Diversity's
yeah.
important.
I think that the reason why we have done so well, I mean, I hate, this is a horrible example, but the Manhattan Project brought together the world's best scientists from all over the world.
Yeah.
You know, they were spirited away from whatever home country they were in, and they brought these great minds together, and they created the most destructive bomb of all time. That's a horrible example, but that's what diversity of mind does.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, part of that too is that they've all had different lived experiences. Right? They've all come from different places, and you put those differences together and you get wildly creative solutions. But it
Yeah.
all of that aside,
Yeah.
You know, that happens in families when you've got kids who have, like, you know, you've got the artistic kid, you've got the really athletic kid, you can pull these resources together and come together and have something creative. And so, like, when I think about diversity, even just in sort of, you know, science and woo, like those should be incompatible, but they're part of our lived experience. We've all had those experiences of awe where we're not sure that we even want to understand why we think, feel, or act the way we do in that moment. It's just okay to be open to it and go, wow,
yeah,
I don't want
I
to
mean,
break it down.
They are literally developing a quantum computer. I mean, it is being developed. Quantum computing is being developed as we speak.
Amazing.
And quantum energy, is woo as it gets. So tell me how those don't overlap.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
know? But there is science. I mean, I don't understand it, but there's science to back it.
No.
Wow.
Actually, there's when you think about nanotechnology, like I don't understand what that means, but then I don't know how a computer is programmed. Like there's so like I remember the first time, and this is not an ad for Apple, because everybody has touch screens now, but I remember the first time I had handled a touch screen. I could have been like a 2-year-old. I had no way to imagine how this was happening, you know, playing the little game on the tablet device. And it's like, what? How? You know, and now I have a glove that I can use with it too, because you know it's cold in the winter, so
So touchscreen monitors, I don't think they went, I think they sort of, they were a fad, then people realized they weren't really practical. But it was a, I'm sitting here touching my computer right now. It was a weird thing, So I get you could just because you can do it doesn't mean it's a good idea. But yeah,
Just
the
because you
whole,
can doesn't mean you should. That's where that wisdom comes in, right? Like to be able to go, okay, here's the creative hole. Is this the right thing to do? And that values-based piece that says, you know, is this respectful? Is it loving? Is it kind? Is it generous? Is it what's your values? How do you show up in this? And how do those values show up in your solution that you arrive at? And so that isn't necessarily, you know, like I don't know that you can crunch the numbers on that. Values
I
are
don't think that that's one of those
that
things that
woo.
you should crunch the numbers on. It's just, yeah. How does this feel good? No? Okay, don't do it anymore. It hurts when I do this, then don't do that, right?
Or go see a doctor.
Okay, I'm really fascinating. Fast. I'm really. Fa I'm very
You
fascinating.
are
Aren't I
fascinating.
fascinating? No, I'm very. I'm very. I'm very fascinated about one of your talking points in your intake form. Yes, I have intake forms, audience. And you say that daydreaming for you'd like to talk about daydreaming for problem solving. So what does that look like?
Well, you know, part of one of the three functional networks in the brain, the default mode network, is always active when we're doing nothing. It's when you're taking a shower and you know what you're doing, it's like you're probably daydreaming. You're thinking about yourself, usually. It's self-reference thoughts. And so it's called the default mode because that's where we go by default when we're not doing something meaningful. And daydreaming is what happens when that default mode network is active. So bringing that together in kind of a let's do this intentionally. If you can sit with that and go, okay, for the next 10 minutes, I'm going to take this time and let that part of my brain exercise, because that's a lot of creativity. That part of the brain pulls in information from memories, from just random thoughts that are just kind of filed in different areas, and pulls them together and creates something unique. You can visualize. Now, I know not everybody visualizes, and it's not abnormal, but not everybody creates images in their brains, and that's okay. But to be able to actually conjure up something intentionally that goes, you know, I've been working on this problem. Now I'm going to take a break and I'm just going to daydream about it and see what lands. It's a little bit like actually my husband and I went for a walk yesterday, and he had been working on trying to figure out a solution to a problem. And he'd spent probably about like half an hour, 45 minutes, just like, oh, what if I, what if I, what if I? And it's like, hey, let's go for a walk. So we took the dog for a walk. And within the first like 5 minutes, we were just walking quietly, letting the dog do his thing because he's got to, you know, smell every tree because why not?
Yeah, why not?
And he's like, oh,
He's checking his mail.
yeah, yes, scrolling. But my husband just was like, oh. And then he tells me this answer. And I was like, oh, okay. He's like, no, you don't understand. It just hit me, just in those moments where you just allow your mind to wander. And so to be able to do that intentionally, and some people will, you know, get a little too involved in daydreaming. I probably spent a lot of time in elementary school years daydreaming in class
You know,
perhaps
I
wasn't
don't
the
have
best
any
use.
problem with that. We can come back to that, but I'll put
Okay.
a pin in that because I want to talk about it.
Okay. But, I mean, and actually there are some people who, if you're dealing with a lot of pain and daydreaming is an escape from that, that can be a problem. But if you're using it just kind of like, okay, it's a tool in my toolkit. Let me open up to what my brain kind of knows intuitively, what my heart knows, what my being knows. And it'll probably make you aware of some beliefs that you have. And you're like, oh, I didn't know I thought that. If you just allow and do it with some awareness. And so, yeah, solutions happen when you let that happen intentionally.
Which is why there's a whiteboard in my bathroom.
See, I have sometimes the best ideas,
Yeah, in
like
the
while I'm
shower.
brushing my teeth, and then I'm like, where's my pen?
Yeah, right by the shower. Because
Yeah.
when you're in there, I mean, it's like when you drive, if you commute home, like if you have a job, a day job, and you commute
Yeah.
home, sometimes you don't remember how you got home. You just
Yep.
got home. Well, what were you thinking about? You were daydreaming,
Yeah.
right? So I want to go back to daydreaming as a kid. When I was in elementary school, our classrooms had big windows, and I would sit always. I like to sit by the window because I finished my work early because I was smart, right? And I would stare out the window and daydream rather than be disruptive to the class, right? These days, they don't put windows in classrooms. They're like little prison cells. And so, what do the kids do? They disrupt the class. You
Yeah.
know, daydreaming should be encouraged at that age. It really should.
Imagination is important.
Exactly. Okay, so aphantasia is the
Yes.
inability to imagine or to visualize.
Yes.
I have aphantasia. My cousins and my aunt have it. We're a very aphantasia family, right?
So how do you
However,
daydream?
but I still I don't see things, but I still can imagine, and I can still I just don't do it with pictures, and not with words either. It's just sort of I don't even know how to explain it. Yeah, I do dream.
Yeah.
And when I dream, there is some visual aspect of it, but it's more impression than picture, if that makes
Wow.
sense. But yeah, I don't. If you ask me to imagine an apple, I think of the word apple.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
Do you ever think of the way it tastes or the way it smells, or there are there other sensory kind of things that come up?
oh yeah, I can think. Yeah, I can think of
Okay.
taste. Yeah,
Yeah.
how interesting. Because when you just said, "How does an apple taste?" I tasted
Yeah.
apple. I didn't really
Right.
taste it, but I got the feeling of a tart sweet
Yeah.
apple. Yeah, not feel. I don't know.
Wow.
Not a hit, I guess, is the better word.
Yeah.
But just because you can't visualize doesn't mean that you can't do the work around visualization. Yeah,
Got it.
it's.
Thank you for that. 'Cause I have a friend who's never been keen on visualizations, 'cause she's like, I don't get what people are doing. And so I thought, well, maybe she, I never thought to ask her, well, did you ever daydream? Like, yeah, I'm gonna ask her now.
The when I read a book, I create voices. Like when I'm reading a character's words, I have the
Yes.
voices in my I can assign voices to people. And
So it's like a radio play.
some people when they read books, they can imagine what the person looks like. I just, you know, so yeah, it's interesting. It's I'm and it's never prevented me from doing anything successfully.
Of course, no, it's actually it's not abnormal. It's actually just part of that neurodiversity.
Yeah, and back to the thing with the meditation, if you ask me to clear my mind, that's impossible because my mind is always working. I don't visualize. I think in words, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway,
Yeah.
there's a discussion on that. Tell your
Yeah.
friend there's hope. So,
I know.
all right, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to talk about?
Well, I think one of the things that I find just, we're talking about kind of things coming together and how you've had so many people with Woo. And I saw the announcement for the upcoming like Maribeth Decker's Pets and People. And I don't think there could be something that was more timely for me. Just said goodbye to a pet on Thursday last week. And very unexpected. She's a a large bird who was supposed to outlive me. That was the plan. So didn't plan on that. And, you know, that here's this person, Mary Beth, who has was a naval officer and is now an animal communicator and helps people work. And I'm like, I want to wait. I want to hear this. And so I might not have paid as much attention if we weren't having this. And like, this is that blend of science and woo. Like the brain pays attention to things when it's supposed to happen. Like, you know, I mean, I'm going to pay more attention as to your emails, because it's like, okay, I've got to keep track, and I'm going to read more closely because I know we have this coming up. And the woo is, it was a gift, because it could have been something about, I don't know, engineering for the 21st century. I don't know. And it would have been like, oh, okay, that's nice. But this is that blend of my salience network, the part of my brain that keeps track of what's important, what do I need to pay attention to, and how do I decide what to do with it? Do I kind of go off and daydream because it's all good? Or do I kind of get involved and like make things happen? Was able to pay attention to that because it was just at the right time. And life happens that way if you can open up to it.
I agree.
Yes, my brain is doing that work, but that didn't have to be there.
Yeah. If you're paying attention, you'll see
the signs.
There's
something more. There's something more, I believe.
Yeah. Yep. If you're paying attention, you'll see the signs. Believe. Exactly. How do you say believe in French? I'm Googling it. Hold
good.
On.
Good,
hey,
good,
Siri,
good.
How do you say believe in French? Croix.
Croix.
Croix. That's how you pronounce it. Croix. Thank you, Siri. I just got an iPhone like for Christmas, or yeah, it was a Christmas present. And so that's 2 months. I still don't know how to use it. However, I've figured out how to use Siri.
Sometimes she listens in and gets involved in the conversation. So.
Oh, I was in a network. I do a lot of virtual networking, and I had sent a text message to a friend, and I put my phone down. And then it was my turn to give my weekly presentation, and I gave my weekly presentation. And then when the meeting is over, I look down and my phone is on, and my weekly presentation was typed out as a text message to my friend. And I was like, how did that happen? So I saved it because I wanted it for later.
Gotta love it.
But yeah, this is not an endorsement of Apple. This is the first iPhone I've ever had. And the learning curve is steep,
it's
y'all.
steep.
It is steep. Okay.
Yeah.
So because you have these two businesses, let's talk about how you market them. How do you get the word out about what you're doing? And how do you differentiate between the two? Because it's not a bad thing to have two businesses.
Well, in my clinical practice is word of mouth. I let that roll. And I'm kind of in, you know, it's well contained. So I actually don't really market anymore. But my coaching practice, the sort of cafe mom, I am on YouTube, and I do free neuromeditation classes. Well, I call it meditation, mysticism, and neuroscience and mysticism in action, right? So you come for a learning a little bit about the brain that meditates, and integrate sort of, you know, physiology, neurophysiology, genetics, a little bit of just my biology nerd part kicks in, and I get to look into all of that research, but make it very much focused on how it relates to meditation. And then I throw in the woo, and then we do a meditation class. So it's a 30 minutes every Monday, and it's marketed through Eventbrite. And so people sign up, and then I kind of connect with them through emails once a week. I missed last week with the parrots passing, but I'll get back there. And then just, keep rinse and repeat. I use the video recording because I've had to learn how to do all of that on YouTube. And I realized I could probably share it on every other platform. It was like that when that coin dropped, it was like, oh.
And you know, so I use this tool called Opus Clip, opus.clip.
Oh.
And it's like $19 a month, I think. And what you do is you give it the YouTube URL of your video, and it turns your long form video into shorts. that you can upload, like 60-minute shorts or 90-second reels or 3-minute videos, whatever length you want it to. And it uses an AI to pull out the parts of the presentation that are good. So after this episode goes live, I'll use Opus Clip to pull out. It gives me 20. It'll give me 20 clips. And then from the 20, I pick 5 that I like. And I upload those to YouTube. And it just adds a little extra pizzazz. So if your video is the right kind of video, the right format video, Opus Clip might be a way for you to repurpose your long form.
Okay.
I'll look into that. To me, it's worth every penny of the $19. I tried a lot of different, and I'm not even an affiliate. I usually don't talk about products that I use unless I'm an affiliate. Right. And Opus doesn't have an affiliate program. But I tried a lot of different clipping software programs, you know, these AI clipping software programs. And Opus is the best. It just is. Of all the ones I tried, Opus is the best. That technology existed?
Yeah. And to be honest, I was never how people were making shorts longer clips. So I actually looked that up like last, because otherwise I was making shorts just by making separate shorts. And it's like, this is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
Takes a lot of time.
I mean, you can't just use what they give you. I edit every single clip. I watch them.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. No. I watch until I have 5, and usually, you know, they're in order of the ones that they think are the most likely to be viral.
The best.
So it takes me some time to go through this process, but it's also a little fun too. I was like, oh yeah, that was a great, that's, oh wow, wow. The AI thought that would be interesting. Let's see it. And it is really fascinating which ones go viral. You know, some of them have 10 views and some of them have 3,000 views, you know, and it's like, oh, I didn't think that was that really good actually, but wow, you know? So and it's, you know, it's just an extra tool in your arsenal. So something to think about. I think it's really interesting.
Thank you.
This is for the audience. Before we started, I had to run your bio through ChatGPT for whatever reason. And so audience, this is really interesting. This is for you, listener. ChatGPT spit out a bio for Judith that sounded like I was reading my bio. And it was just so interesting that we have so much in common, you know, and we've never met each other before, but I think we'd be best friends if we lived next door to each other.
I think so too.
We do have a common friend. So thank you, Liz, for introducing us.
Yeah.
All right. It's time to wrap up. Last question. Mm-hmm. Judith Pinto, for whom or what are you most grateful?
You know, well, I'm really grateful for you for having this opportunity and for making this possible to meet you and to have this opportunity to talk with you. This is a lovely conversation. This is probably the easiest conversation I've had in a long time. But I'm really grateful for the fact that I struggled and that life threw me some curveballs and, you know, tore down my picket fences, because I had to figure things out and I had to learn to trust and I had to not just be methodical and follow the scripts. I had to lean into something more.
Thanks for tuning into Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for micropreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. Our theme music is track 14 by Rev Brock and Soul Lily. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for all the groovy ways to connect with our guest, Judith Pinto. I've been your host, Candice Rodarty. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy, my friends.